Welcome to the Thyroid Fixer podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy, and we're diving deep into the world of hormones, especially for all you fierce women in perimenopause and menopause, and everyone struggling with hypothyroidism. So if you are battling weight gain, you're feeling like shedding those pounds is an impossible feat. If you're dealing with plummeting energy levels, gut-wrenching fatigue, or a libido that seems to have left town, then you're in the right place. And let's not even start on the hair loss. If these symptoms are sounding all too familiar, you have found your tribe. My goal is to educate, empower, and shake up your world. Remember, I want you to embrace every inch of that badass woman that you truly are. So if you're ready to dive in and fix things, let's go. If you're trying to support your thyroid, minerals can help. Your thyroid uses a ton of minerals, including selenium and zinc for thyroid hormone production. In fact, your thyroid uses more selenium than any other part of your body, iodine, and magnesium to maintain the balance between your three thyroid hormones, and then iron to make sure you release thyroid hormones at the right time, and a lot more. That's why it's so important to keep your complete mineral stores full, and that's why I love Beam Minerals. They offer a full-spectrum liquid supplement that replenishes all your minerals at once in the right amounts with close to 100% bioavailability. So your thyroid has everything it needs to function at its best. Beam Minerals gives you comprehensive mineral support in just 30 seconds a day. You just slam it down. Go to beamminerals.com, BEAMMINERALS.com, and use the code Dr. Amy, DRAMIE, for 20% off your first order. That is a huge savings. There is nothing like this on the market. So if you want to get your hands on something very unique, then it's going to be Collagen Fixer 2.0. Here's what I did. Reblended it completely. Took three trademarked bioactive collagen peptides and put them together. One of them, Verisol. This is clinically proven to reduce your wrinkles and to reduce the appearance of cellulite and to improve your hair strength. So it helps your hair grow too. Number two, Body Balance. This bioactive peptide has been shown to increase lean body mass and decrease fat mass. So now we're getting the reduction of cellulite. We're getting improved body composition. Oh, wait, there's one more. Fortigel. Fortigel supports cartilage tissue growth, helping those joints. So anyone with joint pain, if this is holding you back from working out, add this in. So now you get improved joints, improved mobility, improved body composition, better lean muscle, less fat, less cellulite, better hair, better skin, better nails, and some protein too. Why aren't you adding this in? There is nothing at all like it on the market. I'm pretty proud. Pretty proud of this bad boy. Collagen Fixer 2.0. You all have asked over and over again for a gut expert on the show. So now that I know one and he's a friend and I really love his brain and all things surrounding the gut, I brought one on for you. So my guest today is Stephen Wright. He's the owner of Healthy Gut, and he knows the gut because he has his own incredibly powerful story that we're going to start with. But we're going to dive into all things gut. Why are you bloated all the time? Why does it feel like you're 6 months pregnant? What's the connection between the gut and the thyroid and autoimmune? We'll go down all kinds of rabbit holes today. So, Stephen, thank you so much for joining me because you've been in demand by my audience.
Well, thanks, Dr. Amy. Thanks for having me. And I'm excited to chat today.
So you told me your story at a conference we were at and my jaw was on the floor. So we have to start there because it's just so powerful. So tell me, how did you get into kind of diving into the gut and then eventually developing products to help yourself and people?
Yeah. I mean, if you took my family history as my doctor, you would quickly learn that I've had gut issues since birth and I didn't really know it. It was kind of normal in my family. I was treated by a dermatologist with Bactrim DS for 3 years and I collapsed on the job because my entire gut microbiome had been taken over by Bifidobacterium, which is actually considered a good strain. So anyways, I did the antibiotic thing. I did a lot of things that we now know you should not do. But still, even after that, I didn't really see myself as somebody who had like these major gut problems until a year or two after college. I was a consultant in Chicago. I was working for a big four consulting agency and my stress levels were the highest they'd ever been. I was 16 floors up. It didn't matter. I knew I was farty. I knew I was gassy. I knew I didn't want to smell myself, but I didn't have any other options because I was up in this high rise and there was only one bathroom on the floor. And so it didn't matter if I ate chicken and salad or a burger and beers, I would bloat up so much, like so much distension, that I would have visceral hypersensitivity pain, and I would softly cry with like a spreadsheet up. And then of course, if you've ever been in that state, you know, there's only like real one way out of it, and that is the fart. But the bathroom would be blocked, or like it would be inconvenient, or I'd actually be trying to work. And so I would be crop dusting the office. And I'm so sorry to my coworkers, but to their credit, they did report me to my boss. And one Friday I got a nice little talking to in my boss's office. And that was my very embarrassing wake up call to go seek help, you know, from Western medicine at that point.
Right. Right. Oh my God. That's classic. That's an amazing story. Well, first of all, a whole bunch of people just nodded their heads when you said you're bloated all the time, whether you eat. I've heard a patient just told me he ate nothing but ground beef for like a year because it was the only thing that wouldn't bloat him. And I've heard that countless times. Like, I don't eat enough because there are only two foods that don't bloat me. So you really resonated with a lot of people, and you probably resonated with a lot with the fart story too. They're just not going to fess up and raise their hand, but I bet you, I mean, we've all been there. We've all let one out. We're like, oh God, I hope nobody smells that. But it's like, you're so bad. It's more painful to hold it in than it is the pain and embarrassment to let it out. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Been there. Okay. So go ahead. Keep going with your story.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of other embarrassing stories about being on the toilet all night because I had alternating constipation diarrhea type IBS. And so I experienced the pain of both worlds. And I was seeking medical attention. They screened me, to their credit. This was 2008, 2009. So they screened me for celiac, and I don't have the genes for celiac. But basically at the end of it, they said, look, kid, you're 23, 24. You're not that sick. I have a lot of sick people in my office. You have a family history of IBS, so suck it up. You can have all the antibiotics you want, which I was already a no to because of the antibiotic thing that happened during college. And then here's some Metamucil, and you should take whole grains, like eat a ton of whole grains, which I already knew was not working for me. And so it was getting a bunch of no's there and then running into a college friend, a fraternity brother, who we were really close in college, but we drifted apart. He had changed his diet, and he said, I called him, because I don't know if you were like this. I think most people have like a health buddy, like somebody they confess their secrets to, their really gross things or the really sad things they don't want to admit.
Right.
And so we were each other's like IBS buddies. And, you know, and so I called him after missing a date because I was on the toilet and I couldn't get up. And he was like, dude, you got to change your diet. You got to try this thing. It really worked for me when the gluten-free diet didn't work for me. And it was a diet in which you had to make everything from scratch. Nothing could be processed. And it had to be free of a lot of different complex carbohydrates. It's called the specific carbohydrate diet. It's not a diet that is really used much anymore, but it has its underpinnings as like a type of paleo and slightly more restrictive than that. So I go on this diet, which to me, I have no cooking skills, right? I was making like 12 chicken breasts at once and then buying store-bought salad. That was my cooking skills at the time. But I was like, look, I can do this. 1 week into this diet and like 50% of my bloating is gone immediately. And I just had a light bulb moment where I was like, wow, those guys didn't help. So, you know, F them. And I have a lot more control than I thought. And so with all the pain and the anger, it was like, all right, well, my college training was in electrical engineering. In electrical engineering, you can't touch electricity, you can't see electricity. It's just basically solving these really complex problems that you can't really see or touch. And I was like, how much different is the body than that? If I can find other people, doctors or scientists or whoever, who had issues like me, all I have to do is reverse engineer what they did, and I bet I can figure this out. And so a little empowerment plus a lot of anger and a lot of embarrassment. And, you know, I started writing online in 2010, and it's been a decade plus now.
Wow. That's such a journey. So I've heard of the SCD diet. do you remember way back then, what are the specific carbs that you stayed away from? I mean, there's probably a boatload, so you might want to go with what carbs were you allowed. And do you still follow that to this day?
I don't follow it to this day. I did follow it on and off pretty religiously for 4 years. And then the problem for me was that immediately I started realizing that diet alone was not enough. I needed supplements and I needed more. And so a slight amount of relief was helpful, but I was still bloated. You know, like I said, I still had 50% bloating. I mean, I think when you're listening to other, you know, quote unquote experts or other people and tell them about their life, you need to make sure you have the same like beliefs as them. So like, I don't like restrictive dieting. I don't like these people that are like, you should be in a bubble. Don't ever eat gluten. Don't ever drink wine. Don't ever have a cookie during the holidays. Like, I can't handle that. That's not my personality type. I'm a highly emotional, highly sensitive man. And I like all the hedonistic things in life.
Right.
So I was constantly falling off the wagon, but I was also constantly asking why. Why can't I have dairy? You know, because dairy back then, I noticed as I eliminated everything down to, we would call this elimination diet now, but the specific carbohydrate diet is eliminating all the polysaccharides as much as possible. And so you're basically eating like squashes, cooked fruits and vegetables, things like that, but no starches, mostly only fermented dairy, and then no processed foods of any type. Nuts are allowed. So it's very paleo-like without the starches. I think the diet works for a lot of reasons because a lot of people have enzyme issues inside their small intestine. And so you need those enzymes to break down these complex carbohydrates. And without it, you create overgrowth and you create pain and bloating and all these things. So the diet has a lot of good rules. But the diet, I believe, any diet, carnivore, vegan, FODMAPs, they only get you so far. We are long past those golden years before Dow Chemical and before DuPont, before the world became Wi-Fi'd and everything. Like, the age of just diet alone to fix whatever your ailment is, that's gone. And so I think what I found was that I had a number of underlying issues. I had an overgrowth of fungal overgrowth. I had H. pylori. I had some high estrogen. And so I had to go on this journey through functional medicine of peeling back issue after issue. I had some nervous system dysregulation, some trauma, and then adding back in, you know, how do you rebuild after you've been to the point where you're missing dates, you're having accidents on commuter buses, your boss is telling you if you don't stop farting in the office, you're going to get fired. Like, how do you come back from that? That's a pretty dysfunctional place. And so not only did I have to stay on restricted diets, and I still eat 95, 98% sort of, I would guess, a real food paleo diet, but you know, how do you come back from that? I think it's a lot of different journeys through different rabbit holes to find what, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And in my case, I had a dysfunction in almost every part of my body that it accumulated.
Yeah. And that's a lot. Like you said, number one, I am with you 100%. I don't even like to do restrictive dieting with my patients. You know, a lot of them will come in and, should I do the AIP diet? I'm like, well, if you want to be really miserable and not stick to anything, then yeah, sure, go ahead. But what about the low FODMAP diet? It's like, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's going to help temporarily. It's not going to be something that you're going to want to stay on forever, nor probably will you, because you're human and you're going to want to go off and party a little bit here and there. So we have to find something that's doable, that's a solution that doesn't, I want to say, interfere. Everything interferes with your life if you want to be healthy. Like, that's always the give and take, but that allows you to live a life that is pleasurable and you don't have to be going off the rails, but it's controllable, where you can have a normal, non-distended gut walking through your day and not have to worry about where the next bathroom is or who's behind you in line at the grocery store because you're going to fart. So after all of that, what did you figure out? Like, what did you add in for you? Was there a specific thing that was the answer? And where I'm going with this, Stephen, is, you know, these days, and I hear this every day, somebody has a stomach problem and they add on a probiotic and that's it. Like, they'll go to the grocery store, they'll get, you know, the Jamie Lee Curtis Activia. They'll get whatever the grocery store has in their little refrigerator, 'cause they feel like that's better. and they added on a probiotic. Yay. And they take the same one for 2 and 3 years and they wonder why their gut's not any better. So what did you do? And then let's start kind of breaking down like the bad habits that people do, like even taking supplements that they think are going to help, but really aren't.
Yeah. So let me just say contextually, I think this is true for you and for me. Like if you're on the end of you're dealing with Crohn's and colitis and like you're at the end of your rope, you're on these drugs, they're not working. Like restrictive dieting is a super important tool when you're in that super critical phase, I think, of getting symptomology under control. But if you're not in that spot of like, your gut is literally controlling your entire life, if you're more in the mild camp, I do think that just generalized whole food diet with some of the other stuff I'm about to tell you can get people a lot farther. It's to your point, I think that diet has this issue in that it's a lot of emotional and it's a lot of like social. And so we can hyper focus on like what's the optimal diet for gut health or for your inflammation or your thyroid, but we'd be leaving out the social aspects, the emotional aspects. And that's what always compromises everybody's diet. And so I think that's where I've moved, and I think you've moved to like, hey, let's take into consideration an entire human's life. And then how do we work with that? And so, as you said, we are taking more probiotics than ever as a species than we ever have in our entire history of evolution. And IBS and gut related symptomology is at like an all-time high as well. And so if probiotics were the answer to our bloating, our farting, our constipation, our diarrhea, or whatever it is, everybody would have known about that. And we'd all be taking the same one, right? We'd be like, oh, that's the one. It's the yellow one or the red one or whatever. But unfortunately, that promise, that idea has gone far enough for us to all conclude that that's like literally not the answer. They have their role. Probiotics are good. The problem is that they've been commercialized to the point that the best ones are not getting out there because they don't spend as much money on marketing. And they're also more expensive than what people want to pay, you know, to quote unquote, eat, go about their life and just whatever, I'll deal with my IBS, I'll deal with my farting. And so I think that's the issue with probiotics.
And don't you also see that taking the same strain of probiotic day after day, month after month, year after year, only feeds those certain bacteria? I mean, we have how many, like trillions of bacteria in our gut. So if you're taking a probiotic that has, let's say, 20 billion, I mean, you know, 20 billion is a lot, but you still have trillions and trillions of gut bacteria that are not being addressed and not being fed.
Yeah, that's actually more complicated of an experience or a argument, I think. So there's plenty of probiotics actually that at a half billion dosage could move the needle for somebody. Okay. But the problem is it's a very specific strain and it's a specific outcome. So that person might want more muscle mass or fat loss or better eyes, or they might want like less leaky of a gut or something. They're like snipers. Like I hate the war analogy because it's so prevalent at the moment, but it's a really easy analogy to say like, you can't fight a war with just snipers. Like you need, and that's what probiotics are. They're really good when you have an intended target and you know exactly what you're doing with the right product and things like that. They're very good for dialing things in. Another way to say it would be like, maybe like the decor in the house, right? The house is ugly if you don't have the decor. You do need the probiotics, but to your point, people really fail to grasp how quickly the microbiome is changing as they go throughout their life, right? And your environment, the months that you're in, like, is it winter? Is it spring? Is it summer? Your food, are your kids bringing home bugs from other families in the, you know, did you just move across the country like you did? Like all these things are going to change your microbiome. And the idea that one product for the rest of your life, or even for the next 6 months makes sense, is you're already like locking your mindset into a way that's going to probably backfire for you at some point.
Yep. Okay. I like your war analogy because it helps me understand it. And it helps me understand that we need so much more than, and helps people understand that we need so much more than probiotics. So can you talk about the connection between our gut and just our immune system? Now, did you have any autoimmune connection, or was it solely just your gut was an absolute disaster that needed to be fixed. Did you find that it trickled out to any other conditions? And then kind of dive into, if you would for me, that autoimmune gut connection.
Yeah. I mean, well, okay. So personally, I would consider the fact that when I did a full elimination diet, a lot of my symptoms went away. And then as soon as I would have like a little bit of dairy, I would immediately feel my sinuses just swell shut. Mm-hmm. To me, that's a partial immune reaction. At the time, I also had acne, alternating anxiety, depression. And then I was still probably 20 pounds heavier than I am now. And right now I'm still carrying some COVID weight. So I couldn't lose the weight I was trying to lose despite going to the gym 5 days a week, despite being in a calorie deficit. Mm-hmm. And so I would say those things were immune related, but I have screened obsessively for thyroid antibodies. I've screened obsessively for anti-nuclear antibodies or any other sort of autoimmune related stuff. And I don't seem to display that stuff, thankfully, but right, it is 100% there for people. Imagine you're in a video game and you're building your car or your character, right? You only get like 100, let's say you only get like 100 attributes or points to build your thing. If you were building the human body, whoever built us or however we were evolved, the way they built this character is they put 70 to 80 of your points for your immune system in and around your abdomen. They're literally stacked around your intestines and they're right there. And so whatever happens locally there, there is a huge impact on the bulk of your immune system. And then they quickly communicate out to the other 20, 30% of your immune system, which is, you know, located all over the place in your brain, all over the place. And so what's happening in your gut is basically also happening in your immune system because they're so intertwined and they're so localized to each other. And I think people have this idea that, well, if I feel the sniffles in my face or if I feel the watery eyes or some other issue, like that's where my immune system is. It's up here or something, but really it's still in your gut. And what you're experiencing, whether you're experiencing like rheumatoid arthritis in your knee or something like that, that's actually signals. That's a signal out to your genetic weak link. And we all have them. Nobody gets Olympian genetics without weak links. Even the Olympians have family history showing a genetic weak link of some type. And if you drive your inflammation pathways and you drive your autoimmune pathways, it will express wherever you have that weak link. And so in my opinion, based on the research and based on my clinical experience, that's what we're happening, is that you have this unchecked gut level, low grade inflammation that is pissing off the immune system. And then that immune system is telling its buddies, hey, we have a thing going on here. And it just keeps blast. It's just on blast, you know, with the text messages or whatever, that bad things are happening over here. And so everybody else just kind of gets on edge. And then should they have, a genetic weak link somewhere, they're going to be more impacted than everybody else, which is then where we typically get this cross reactivity and this unexpressed autoimmune issue.
Right. And then the T cells and the histamine and everything is tied together, because even with Hashimoto's, well, back to your point really quickly, I wanted to touch on the fact that you have tested, you don't see antibodies present. We do have, I mean, thyroid antibodies are notorious for false negatives. And that's where you really start to get into what's the family history, what are the other conditions, what are the actual symptoms, because, you know, if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck, all that. We kind of have to step back and look at, in your case, like you said, there are other autoimmune or immune reactions present. Or in the case of myself, I never test positive for Hashimoto's. I know I have it. 95% of all hypothyroidism is an autoimmune disease. I destroyed my gut when I was competing, eating literally nothing but chicken, fish, broccoli, and a boatload of artificial sweeteners, because back then we thought that that was okay. And you know, taking massive amounts of ephedra, caffeine. I mean, destroyed my gut, destroyed my metabolism, and I have psoriasis. So through the check marks, I can say, therefore, I have Hashimoto's. Same for you. You have something immune related that obviously got better and resolved itself when you got to the root cause of the problem, which was your gut, and healed the gut. So I love that. You know, I think a lot of times we talk about, well, we do talk about autoimmune having a three-legged stool. And one of the legs of the stool is a leaky gut. Now, a lot of times when I'm describing or another professional is describing that three-legged stool analogy related to autoimmune, everyone goes, well, what exactly is leaky gut? So I'm going to turn that over to you. Can you explain in a layman's way so people can understand, like, what do we mean by this leaky gut thing?
Yeah. So the super quick explanation, and I just did like a 2-hour course on this last summer. So I this will be as deep as you want to go. But the simplest explanation is that you have 7 layers typically of skin. Your intestines are only 1 layer of cells thick. And so when those cells, they're actually designed to open and close based on what's happening inside the body or outside the body. If they get stuck open and they're chronically stuck open, all kinds of particles can enter the bloodstream area, the immune basically system area. And this could be protein, like it could be the beef protein, it could be broccoli, it could be actual toxins like LPS, lipopolysaccharide toxins. It could be microbes that are beneficial. It could be the probiotic you're taking that you think is helping you. Literally anything you put in your mouth could accidentally be going through your gut cells. And then what's behind your gut cells is that whole immune complex you talked about, the T cells and the macrophages and the natural killer cells and the mast cells are going to go crazy with histamines. And this whole just complex of oh shit, you know, is going to happen no matter if it's beef or an actual toxin. And that is what leaky gut is. Leaky gut is the loss of control of the ability to keep what's supposed to be in the intestines, and let things that are supposed to be, you know, on the other side into the body. A lot of people for a long time, including myself, thought it was just physical related. It was just these tight junctions, the ability to open and close the gut cells. New research has really thrown that out the window. I mean, think about it. How were we created, whether it was God or the universe or whatever it was, evolution? Were we really just created with like just one point of failure inside of our very complex gut, that if we lost our tight junctions, then no, the body, nature does not work like that. There's a bunch of redundant protection mechanisms. And so now what we have learned is that there's actually kind of 5 layers to a leaky gut. And when you get to that point where you have autoimmune disease, you have a total failure in the immune system, in the gut immune connection, you do have a failure in the physical layer, and the preceding physical layer means you've also probably lost your microbiome diversity. So you have a dysbiotic microbiome. And when that happens, you basically lose the oxygen gradient and the pH gradient in your gut. And so actually the gut needs to be a low oxygen environment and a low pH environment. When that happens, you literally cannot make the butyrate and the other very important chemicals you need to keep your gut healthy. And so you get stuck in this thing where you keep eliminating foods, things that like make less pain, but those exact same foods are the foods that actually would feed the gut to restore all of those pathways.
Okay. Okay. This is me literally just speaking to you from the heart. So many of you know, I've been where you are with the struggle of weight gain, unexplained. Literally, you're doing everything you can and nothing is working. And I've been in the boat of crushing fatigue, like the type of fatigue you can't explain to anyone unless they've gone through it. The hair loss, legit, when you're counting the hairs that fall out of your head. I get that because I've been there. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. That's why it's my passion to help you specifically get to where you deserve to be. Get to optimization land, which I always joke about being in. But it's not really a joke. It's a place. It's a place of existence in your life where you can enjoy life. You can go out with your friends. You can have a glass of wine. You're not gaining weight looking sideways at a brownie. You have energy to get through the day. You don't even think about being tired because you're not tired. You're just confident. You're confident in your own body. You're confident in your own skin. And beyond that, you're out of that frustrating cycle of doctor jumping, thinking that maybe this one will listen to me. Maybe this one will actually do what they're supposed to do. And then you're disappointed again and you're crying in your car like I was. So that is why it's literally been my mission, and I've been working on this for years and finally got here, to help every single person in every single state and some of Canada. So we can now prescribe to all 50 states. And the reason why this is important is because if you have low thyroid function and you have low hormones, there is no supplement, there's no diet, there's no lifestyle change that you can do to build those hormones back up. And I flat out call BS on any program out there that promises you optimization without actually using bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, including thyroid hormone replacement. If you're not making hormones properly, you're not making hormones properly, and we have to replace that. Now, many of you are in the process of begging your doctor for bioidentical hormones that they're uneducated on. They tell you scary things that just, you know, don't believe them. And many of you are trying to beg your doctor to give you the right thyroid medication. Well, you can stop that now too, because we can order all the labs, prescribe all the bioidentical hormones, all the thyroid medication, all the things. We can do that to all 50 states and most of Canada. Now, when you work with me, when you work with my team, you're getting personalized plans, personalized treatment plans, personalized nutrition, the whole deal, top to bottom. You get what you need to get to the finish line, to enjoy your life, to live with me in optimization land, which is where you deserve to be. You deserve that. So click the link in the show notes, book a free call. We're going to go over everything with you. You don't have to remember everything I just said. The one thing you have to remember is I've been there. I can help you. I promise you're not that tough of a case. And it doesn't matter where you live in the United States and parts of Canada, we can help you. So you're mentioning butyrate. You've talked to me about this in great deal. What does it do? How do we make it? Why is it important? And then what happens if we're not making enough butyrate?
Yeah, so butyrate is 70 to 80% of the colonocyte metabolism. So think large intestine metabolism. It's made by our microbiome. So let's have a quick primer on terms in the gut space. We have probiotics, we have prebiotics, we have fiber, we have postbiotics, and we have paraprobiotics. So let's define them. So fiber, I would call fiber is a non-specific like microbe food. It's a non-specific microbe food. If you have fiber, whether they're good bugs, partially good bugs, or bad bugs, they will eat it. Okay. Prebiotics are special fibers for special bugs or healthy bugs. So special fibers for healthy bugs. The goal of prebiotics is to make the probiotics grow. Probiotics are defined as generally healthy bugs or do healthy things for us. Paraprobiotics are dead healthy bugs that retrain our immune system to do cool things. And then postbiotics is this giant term for the poop of the probiotics, basically all the metabolites. So the probiotics eat their food, the prebiotics, and then they poop out postbiotics. And postbiotics are like all the metabolites that these bacteria produce when they're in a healthy state. The most beneficial of those postbiotics is butyrate. And so that little molecule, it's a short chain fatty acid, and the microbiome makes a bunch of them. That little molecule, I can tell you officially, I could show you a study that is connected to every layer of healing inside the gut. It's also connected to every single chronic disease I've ever seen a study in. Type 1 diabetes, neurodegeneration diseases, IBS, any sort of inflammatory condition. Every time they look for low butyrate, osteoporosis, they see the connection. And so butyrate is a keeper of total body health, but it's also the keeper of gut health.
Okay. That's pretty powerful. That's really powerful. Go into some of the studies, because now I'm geeking out and I want to know more.
I didn't prep a bunch of butyrate studies, so I'll try my best. But I want to just double click before we go super deep on why, like, how could that be, right? Because I'm making like a bold claim here.
Yeah.
If you can't eat fibers and prebiotics because you bloat, because you have constipation, you have diarrhea, you have whatever, your microbiome doesn't have the source of food it needs to ever be healthy. You can take all the probiotics you want. It won't be healthy. They're not feeding the healthy bugs. They're just impacting the bugs to shift the community one way or the other. So if you you know, just like a fire, if you cut off the oxygen or you cut off the wood, the fire goes away. Either way, you've cut down your microbiome's ability to be healthy. And if the microbiome is quote unquote like another organ, if it's so important for everything else, or what is it that the microbiome does? And one of the things that it does is it creates this butyrate that is so important to the health of the intestinal system, but then also 10 to 15% of it goes systemic. And so in this case, butyrate is also tied to GLP-1. So, you know, when you have obesity, you have lowered butyrate typically, you have less GLP-1. In osteoporosis, there's butyrate signaling pathways that actually go into the osteoclast and tell it to make more bone. There's a bunch of asthma studies where butyrate is low and then asthma is higher in the lungs. And then if you take butyrate, it's better. There is new research coming out about Parkinson's and dementia for low butyrate and basically traveling. It's basically traveling up the vagal nerve is what they think. And, you know, what's happening in the gut is typically happening in the brain and vice versa. So if you have inflammation in the gut, butyrate's helpful there. It does, you know, reason that butyrate would be helpful for the brain long-term as well. So it's type 1 diabetics, it's low, it's all over the place. It's pretty crazy.
So it sounds like instead of everyone running out and buying Activia, we should be running out and buying butyrate because that's going to cover a whole host of issues. And I've heard that a lot. With the fiber, oftentimes I tell people, no, you don't want to add in more fiber. You want to actually reduce the fiber because you're not digesting the fiber well anyways, and it's just reacting in your body. I've heard that a ton. Butyrate is not just for those who can't digest the fibers. It's for anyone. It's for anyone, right? I mean, like, is this one? Can we boldly say everybody should be taking butyrate?
Well, if we can say that about vitamin D and magnesium, then I would say, yeah, it's in the same class of compounds. The amount of people who are likely low or let's say you're not low, but you are over 50 and you're trying to age with grace, then yeah, I would say if you're trying to stave off chronic disease as long as possible, because here are the mechanistic studies. So when you take oral butyrate, you do increase the diversity of the microbiome, which we know microbiome loss is associated with autoimmunity. We know it's associated with aging, associated with almost everything. Right. We know that butyrate increases MUC2, so the mucus expression. And so it's going to help your mucous membranes everywhere in your body, which is also very important to protecting against infections and just generalized health of the body. Butyrate, the more butyrate you have, the lower oxygen concentration in your gut, which is good. And so the bugs that we want to grow in our gut are called anaerobic bacteria, without oxygen bacteria. If you have too high of oxygen, it's like trying to go live on Mars without oxygen. Like, we don't have the right environment for us to live on Mars without support. If the oxygen gradient in the gut is too high, the good bugs that we want, the probiotics are anaerobic, they can't live. They literally can't. So we could dump all the fibers we want. We can dump all the probiotics we want down there, and we'll never get ahead until we reset the oxygen gradient. It does increase tight junctions, all these good things. So I would say, yeah, I would say butyrate belongs in the camp of, if you are dealing with a chronic illness, it is 100% something to throw in there, because people will feel it pretty quickly if you get the right brand. And then if you're in the anti-aging community and you look at the hallmarks of aging, microbiome loss is right at the top of the list. And so I would put it on the short list of gut supplements to think about taking for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I call them the no duh supplements, the ones that you're just going to add in every day because they have that wide reaching benefit across the board. And why aren't you taking it? And then you can get specific with your other supplements per your different conditions that you need to address. But it's sounding like, just like you said, with vitamin D, with magnesium, all of those ones that, like, no duh, we just take them every day. We should probably add in butyrate to that list because of its host of beneficial things. Now, you mentioned GLPs, and I want to come back to this because I've seen, not studies written up, but I've seen a few articles from experts saying, hey, you know, with these GLPs, which we know that there are disastrous consequences with the GLPs, you know, basically gastric paralysis and just the lowering of gastric motility in and of itself has the bloating, the nausea, the heartburn that's associated with it, the lack of nutrients, all of that. So people are obviously We're in an obese country. 90% of us need to lose weight. We're all searching for the next thing. And now these GLPs come out, so people are really grabbing hold. It sounds like this could be a much gentler, safer way to increase your own GLP-1 in your gut, because GLP-1 is made in the gut, right? Am I correct?
Yeah, it's in the cells. I believe it's in the cells around the gut. Yeah.
Right. So talk to me more about that connection with butyrate helping your body make its own. And would that help with weight loss without using the drugs?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's early days and there's no specific studies yet on butyrate in humans, GLP-1, you know, technically going up yet, but the standard known interactions are that butyrate does stimulate GLP-1 release. And so you have a pharmaceutical where you're taking like 100 units of the end product GLP-1, and it, you know, it causes all the things you said, as well as like downregulation of happiness sometimes, and like all different things that are related to satiety. Basically, you basically have no desire to eat. You don't even really want to do much. It's mimicking what should normally be happening. If we were in a different alternate reality and people were eating a lot of vegetables and we were eating more fruits, that's a bunch of fiber and it's a bunch of polyphenols, which feed the butyrate producers. Those butyrate producers would create butyrate. They would help create GLP-1, and your satiety feedback loop and your GLP-1 status and your butyrate status would all be elevated, and you would naturally feel fuller sooner and naturally end up in a more thin state, because it would be kind of painful, actually, just like it is on a GLP-1, to keep eating. And so I do believe in the future we will have studies that show that you can have a modest reduction in weight potentially from these butyrate supplements, but we're not there yet. And again, it'll be modest because, again, we're not trying to force all the GLP-1 to be released at once. We're just trying to naturally get the normal level back to where it should be.
Right. Right. So it's going to help you control your appetite and not go overboard, but you're not going to be in that, just like you said, Stephen. I mean, it is a true state of, I cannot even take a bite. Like, I can't even get my mouth around this piece of meat that I need to chew on because I need my protein. I can't do it. I mean, it really, because I've self-experimented just to see what the hype is about. And it's like, oh my God, I've never not been able to eat. And that's literally what happened. So I think if we take the people out there that are like, you know, I can't control my appetite. Maybe their glucose or insulin's all over the place. We need to reel that in. What we could do is stack my berberine blood sugar fixer with your butyrate, and we could even make it like a weight loss appetite control stack, because it really sounds like if you put those two together, you would have a much better, safer control over your eating and your metabolism, your carb and sugar cravings, than going on the, you know, $1,200 a month GLPs that could shut your gut down entirely. So I definitely like that tie.
Yeah, I definitely would start there if you're, you know, unless you're morbidly obese and like the decision is death in a year or two, you know, go on the GLP-1s if that's the case. But if you're considering it, it's cheaper. I think you're going to have less side effects. And hopefully, yeah, the combo of the two would, you know, help you begin to reduce your cravings, help begin to trim the microbiome down with the butyrate or the berberine. I mean, get the thyroid going faster. I think it would be a worthwhile test for sure. The other way to do it though, too, would be people who have experienced the extreme weight loss and they need to bridge off, because I don't know if you've seen the studies on these drugs, but like many of them regain almost all the weight. And instead of it all being like split between lean body mass and fat mass, it's like all fat mass because they cut their lean body mass. To you, this has to be so crazy, because like from a physique competitor standpoint, the bodybuilding world, the physique worlds have like known like the ratio of lean body mass and like calories in and calories out and the type of macronutrients so well.
Yeah.
And for, I guess, the pharmaceutical researchers just never played in that realm, because unfortunately, after you lose that weight, if you don't bridge it with something, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, big time. And what we're finding with the GLP is, not to make this a GLP podcast, but what we're finding with it, to your point, is
And I remember Peter Attia released an article. It was sometime last year, and I read it, and it was, you know, hey, we're finding that these GLPs are cutting lean body mass too. It doesn't, they don't have a preference for you burning fat. You're burning fat and muscle at the same time. And, you know, this was early in the game. I'm like, nah, I'm not seeing that. I mean, I kid you not, it was within a week or two of me using the GLPs, experimenting on myself. Yes, I was one that only needed to lose 10 pounds, but I wanted to play around because they just came out. And sometimes I experiment on myself for my patients too. And literally I saw, like, I call it my mother's arms. You know, I'm like, what is this loose skin here? Oh, I lost muscle. And sure enough, like I didn't gain the weight back, but I had to bust my ass to get the muscle back because yeah, you lose lean muscle mass on those. Okay. So that's my GLP. I think to your point, I think it's great if you're really overweight and you know, nothing is happening and we need to move the needle and your insulin's high and your A1C is high. I think it's a great adjunct. It's just been abused like everything else. So, and I thought you were going to say, you know, the bodybuilders are the ones that abuse everything first. I was like, yeah, they do. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, totally. But that's why I love studying those crowds. I mean, ephedra is great. It's too bad it got banned. It's a really wonderful substance. But I think, look, GLP-1s are kind of like elimination diets. You can take them too far. They're supposed to be a specific intervention for a specific problem. And then you need to taper on and off of these things. You know, like that's how people get stuck in chronic elimination dieting is they never have a plan. Or I'm surprised we haven't got there yet, but maybe we'll go there now. But these people and their stinking parasite cleanses and their like candida cleanses, like that is a whole, I got a whole beef with that crowd, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to think that the body's so easily manipulated that you don't need to bridge before, after, and during these conditions to actually produce the result you want.
Okay, we have to go there now because I didn't know that you felt this way too. It drives me bananas, all of these parasite cleanses. So, you know, here's the thing. I got a dog. He licks my face. Yeah, I've seen him eat deer poop and lick his butt. So I know that I have parasites, right? But it doesn't bother me. What is the deal with everyone thinking they need to do a parasite cleanse and that's going to be the be-all and all?
I mean, again, people want a magic pill and they want to see a result. And so, you know, I think that's the draw to it. But this is 2024, so this is my year 15 in gut health and in the natural medicine world. Parasite cleanses were the rage in 2009, 2010. It was all these weird like packages you get in the mail, some of them from Australia, some of them from all over the world. These things go in fads. And regardless of that, people, I think, want a result and they're just like grasping at some like magical thing. Stop and ask the question, if a parasite is really an issue, or if candida is really an issue, how did your body allow that to happen in the first place? There are bad parasites. There are bad, you know, pinworms. There are bad overgrowths in the gut that are 100% need to be treated and they need to be eradicated. But the question still remains, why did it happen? Because like you said, you have a dog. I have two dogs. We both go out and do nature things. There's microbes everywhere. And there's pathogenic microbes everywhere. Why is it that some people get the bugs and other people don't? Or if they, maybe they do, but they don't notice because their health isn't impacted. Why is that? And that's because those folks who got the bug and are impacted, their immune system, their gut is so trashed that they cannot handle it on their own. So let's go back to the war analogy. What happened in Iraq? What happened when we pulled out? The day we pulled out, chaos, just chaos. We spent decades there trying to like support things with like essentially create a fictitious scenario. The same thing's happening when you do a parasite cleanse. You're ingesting a bunch of herbs or prescriptions or whatever it is, and you're killing and you're creating an artificial environment. The minute you stop that protocol, which you should stop, don't do this forever, you should stop, what's going to happen? If you don't set the conditions to go in a certain way, chaos. And you will return back to where you were in the beginning. So if your immune system was down, if your hormones were down, if your gut was down, and that allowed this infection to take hold, you've got to rebuild those things before, during the killing campaign, and then definitely after, unless you'd like to repeat this cycle over and over for the next couple of years.
Right.
And I feel like that's what people are not talking about.
I like it. Yeah, I am in agreement. And I've said the same thing on this podcast. It's how is your body going to deal with it? Right. So, okay. And what about the whole candida thing? You're just kind of tying that in because everybody says they got candida. And again, sometimes we'll see it on testing or on a GI map. Same with parasites. We might see it pop up as positive on testing, but you put candida kind of in the same camp.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially because candida is only partially pathogenic. I mean, it's in all of our guts. Like there's no getting rid of it completely. Just like there's no getting rid of FODMAPs or there's no completely glyphosate free. Like you can't completely get rid of candida. It's contextually dependent. In a healthy gut, candida just is there. It's existing. It's in a state that's non-harmful to the body. But in a scenario where your immune system's down, your gut is wrecked, you're in a high stress environment, maybe your hormones are whacked, it's gonna take hold. And I think that's where, if we do a part two, we can talk about this, but one of the reasons why you were correct at the beginning where you're saying like diet doesn't matter, like diet matters, but it doesn't matter, is because what actually matters is what you break down of that food and what you absorb. Because if I take peanut butter and I go throw it on the sidewalk, or if I keep throwing sugar on the floor, I should not be surprised if ants come in the kitchen. Or I shouldn't be surprised to look out on the sidewalk and see like life happening, microbes and a dog licking the peanut butter, whatever happens, because that's what happens. Life lives when there's fuel. If you are eating paleo, autoimmune paleo, low FODMAP, carnivore, vegan, whatever it is, and you cannot actually break the food down and take it into your body, and you leave it in the digestive tract too long, why would you be shocked if you have SIBO or SIFO or any other infection? You literally are asking for it. You've set the conditions correctly by not being able to absorb it yourself to feed microbes that you don't want in your house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Simple as that.
Yeah. So I guess that's where the diet matters. That's where the preparation, like if you're going to do a killing campaign on yourself or whatever, why don't you check your organs, check your stomach, check your intestines, like make sure that they don't need support just breaking down your normal foods. Because if you could focus on that, along with eating a reasonable diet, a lot of those bloating issues, a lot of the constipation, the diarrhea issues, the non-emergency medical issues can be resolved pretty rapidly. Like this doesn't need to be a fight for the next 3 years of your life. If you take it seriously and you come at it from like a different approach where you're not just like Activia and, you know, meditation once a week. And then I heard that thyroid podcast. I forgot to take the pills again today. I ordered it, but I forgot to take it. Like if you act like that, then I don't know. You're not ready. You're just not ready. But if you start to get these things going and you start to take this stuff a little seriously, I think change can happen like really, really fast for folks.
And that's really important for the gut people, as you know, because you've walked in those shoes. You know, when you're bloated, when you're distended, when you're constipated, or when you're running to the toilet, life just sucks. Like that's where your mind is. You can't focus on anything else except that. So yeah, I'm with you there. All right. So last question in this part one, because we will do a part two and make it a little bit more advanced, but betaine hydrochloric acid, it's just something that I see deficient in Hashimoto's patients. Now, you might have more data like, you know, no, it's deficient in a lot of people or in all autoimmune or whatever. But I find that that really is an important piece of the puzzle with Hashi patients because they're always low in that and they will experience either the heartburn from being low in hydrochloric acid or they'll be really that distended, bloated is what I see a lot.
Yeah, I think like if there's one thing you test in the next like month or two for your health, like there's a bunch of gadgets you could try. There's a bunch of stuff you could do with your health over the next few weeks. Buying some betaine HCL and just doing an HCL challenge is a less than $50 choice that could totally change the game for you. Like literally folks who start supplementing with this and need it within a week, their whole life is totally different. And I think that's a cool intervention, right? Not every intervention happens like that. I would say 70 to 80% of people who have some sort of gut dysfunction or gut complaint have low stomach acid. That's coming from a few doctors who actually have testing equipment in their office. Someone comes in and complains of heartburn or IBS. They actually run them through the test, which there's multiple tests out there for low stomach acid. They're just $300 to $600. They're very hard to get. It's called a GI pill capsule test or a Heidelberg test. But the outcome is, if you're low, you're going to do this betaine HCL supplementation. So you could just skip that and just try the product. And if the product works for you, then you'll kind of have your answer there. It's a lot faster. It's a lot cheaper. And the crazy research that's coming out finally, like seriously, finally, I wrote my first low stomach acid like article in 2011, but nobody cared back then. In the last 2 years, multiple research papers have come out. One of them looked at basically when people went in for endoscopies, they did a sampling of their gastric juices, their stomach acid. And if your gastric juices were over a 4 or higher when they did the sample, you had up to a 2,000 times increase in LPS dumping into your small intestine every day than the people who were 3 and under. And basically what they showed is that the stomach acid being strong enough detoxifies LPS bacteria in your microbiome or your oral microbiome, excuse me. So you're swallowing, I'm swallowing, you're swallowing, we're all swallowing 24/7. There are bacteria, gram-negative bacteria with toxins in them. If we have the proper stomach acid, we neutralize that LPS and those toxins, and there's no extra inflammatory load. There's no extra like potential autoimmune load being dumped in your small intestine. But if you have inappropriate stomach acid, it's not strong enough, you will literally, I don't care what diet you do, I don't care how much curcumin you take, I don't care what you do, you will not stop the inflammation you're swallowing every day because your stomach acid's not proper. And that was really cool. And that really blew my mind. I didn't realize the delta could be that big.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. Okay. So when we're doing the HCL test, how do we load that? Like, do you have a product that is just betaine HCL for them to do the test to see if they need it? And then how do we do it?
Yeah. So we do have HCL Guard, which is a more advanced betaine HCL product that includes intrinsic factor and some motility products like organic ginger and DGL and things like this. They're all helpful for people with low stomach acid. Mm-hmm. Whether it's our product or someone else's product, just make sure it's got pepsin in there and then take one with your dinner. If you don't feel anything, great. Tomorrow, take two. And at some point, you'll feel some sort of heat, burning sensation, or you'll have loose stools. And whenever that number happens, like let's say it's 4, then your body wants 3 of that product per meal going mm-hmm. forward.
Okay.
Should you experience the burning feeling or the heat sensation or something like that, just take a teaspoon of baking soda and just in a small amount of water and just chug it down. That'll neutralize the acid that you put in there. The acid's in the capsule. The baking soda is a base. You know, it'll all be okay. Nothing's harmed there.
Right.
If you still meet all the criteria for like Hashimoto's and low stomach acid, like you're looking at this list online, you're like, I have low stomach acid, but I tried the test. It didn't work. What that probably means is that your mucosal membranes are shot and you just don't have the actual mucosal membranes to tolerate the right amount of acid. And so that's where, you know, working on your hormones, your progesterone, your estrogen, you could take some mucosal healing herbs, some mucilaginous herbs, things like that, that can really help rebuild those membranes. And then you could try again in say 60 days or 120 days, something like that, and see again if it's good to go.
Oh, fascinating. I love that. And it's so simple. Like you said, skip the test. Just do the self at home test. It's so easy. It's so easy. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on today and imparting all your wisdom. So I know you carry the sodium butyrate that we talked about. You carry the HCL.
Oh, no. We do next generation butyrate. Tributyrin.
Tributyrin. Nice. Okay. So that... I can't let you go yet until you give us the 1 minute spiel on why is that better? Why is that better?
It's Windows 95 versus smartphones. So sodium butyrate is immediately absorbed with the sodium molecule. Tributyrin is fat backed and it needs a little lipase. So it's naturally going to penetrate much deeper into the gut.
Oh, so that's important to look at as well when you're buying a butyrate product or just buy Stephen's. That way you're going to be guaranteed getting the right one. There you go. So you have that on the website. You have HCLGAR. We'll put the links in the show notes, of course. But any last tips that you want to tell people on how they can better their gut in addition to everything that we just told them? And then where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find us at Healthy Gut. That's, you know, that's the main place to hang out for our company and the stuff that I'm up to. The main tips are, you know, listen to this show. Just keep trying things. Don't get locked into what I said, what Amy says, what anybody says, and just keep trying things for your own gut and you'll figure out the right combo as long as you don't give up.
There really is no one size fits all, but I think everything that you gave on the show today is very basic and doable, you know, without dropping $500 on a GI map, without dropping $600 to see what your HCL is. All of these things are really implementable and they're powerful. And to your point, you don't need 20 different supplements. You just might need a very targeted 1, 2, 3, and that will be enough to give you the relief that you've been searching for years, years and years. Yeah, so, yeah.
What you just said is the key. I can't let us go for a second. What makes a professional sports athlete is the fact that they do the fundamentals better than any amateur could ever dream of. And both of us have access to levels of equipment and testing that most people would dream of. And at the end of the day, I've done it all. And doing the basics correctly, powerfully, is actually significantly better than any peptide or any cool test you could think of. And if you do the basics 100% and you still don't have what you want, that's when you go to the advanced stuff.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you so much for your time and your knowledge today. I appreciate it. We'll have you back on for part 2, a little bit more advanced, deep dive into the gut.
All right. Thank you.